Hello, and welcome to the Community Mennonite Church Podcast. Today we have a sermon by guest preacher Andrea Sainer.
The Lord is our righteousness. The voice of the prophet Jeremiah speaks to us from rubble, from darkness and chaos. Jerusalem, the city of David, has been destroyed, the temple obliterated, its instruments for sacrifice and worship, its gold all carried away. And the inhabitants of the city, the political and religious leaders of Judah, the scribes, the wealthy, they've all been forcibly removed to Babylon, the seat of empire. Jeremiah himself has avoided this deportation, but later he will be exiled to Egypt. And now Jeremiah speaks from a destroyed Jerusalem. Jeremiah had warned the people of Jerusalem that this was coming. The temple sermon back in Jeremiah 7 is a great example of Jeremiah's warning to the Jerusalemites that they can no longer live as they were living. At the time, the worshipers in the temple were assuming that God would protect them no matter what. If God dwelled in the temple, who could destroy it, they thought. If the people lived in the city where God dwelled, who could threaten them? But Jeremiah declared the decidedly unpopular view that the presence of God among the people was contingent. The people simply couldn't go on oppressing the immigrants, the orphans, the widows, flagrantly breaking the commandments by stealing, murdering, committing adultery, following after other gods, only then to come into the temple and assume that they would be forgiven, only to assume they would be protected by the Lord's favor to them. The covenant promises were not to be presumed upon. So through Jeremiah, the Lord pleaded with the people to amend their ways and their doings so that the Lord would dwell with them. The Lord had promised to dwell among the people, but this promise was only good if the people committed themselves to trusting in the Lord, which meant keeping the commandments, doing justice and righteousness. God's presence must be accompanied by justice, defined as care for the vulnerable in society, or it is not God's presence at all. And despite Jeremiah's best efforts at calling the people to change their ways, the Judeans did not do this. The prophets, including Jeremiah, spoke, but no one listened. And so exile came to Judah and Jerusalem. The Babylonians came, destroyed the city, displacing its people. So we are asked to imagine that this passage read this morning from chapter 33 is given to the Israelites and the Judeans in the midst of tremendous loss and destruction. Everything they know has changed, has been taken away. Everything that God had done in the past seems to have come undone. In exile, the God of Israel and Judah, once governing the earth from his throne in the temple, now seems to be absent, conquered, powerless. And here Jeremiah speaks again out of destruction, now offering hope to the hopeless. In those days, in the coming days, Judah will be saved, and Jerusalem will live again in safety. The exile will not last forever. Judah and Jerusalem will be restored. God has not forgotten God's promises. When all seems lost, still then God will act. God, who appears to be silent and absent, will be silent and absent no more. And this restoration really happened. Exile ended. The people returned to the land and were given opportunity to start again. Cyrus the Persian comes to rule the former Babylonian Empire, and he takes a different governing strategy. This strategy sends the Judeans back to their homeland. So Isaiah even refers to Cyrus as an agent of God's reconciling work in the world, as an anointed one, allowing God's people to be a distinct community again. Jeremiah 33 points to this post-exilic restoration and also beyond it. In the coming days, the Lord will raise up a righteous branch to rule over Israel and Judah. This language is a bit confusing. What are these coming days? And who is this righteous branch? The coming days is how the Old Testament sometimes refers to the future, whether the immediate future or farther off, even to the eschaton, end times, final things. Throughout the Bible, the theme of the end is not how we sometimes imagine it. What is important here isn't the timeline. The timeline isn't specified. There's no use in us trying to determine the day or the hour, which no one knows. What is important to Jeremiah and to other biblical authors is that God will act in the end with great power, transforming Judah, Jerusalem, the nations, the world in the process. God's action is both new and in continuity with what God has already done. So in Jeremiah, God will fulfill God's promises to the people and to David. The branch, then. The branch is a royal figure, a king in the line of David, an anointed one, a Messiah. This branch will establish God's will on earth once and for all, redeeming Israel and Judah, and through them, redeeming the world. Also using imagery of trees, the book of Isaiah says, "A shoot shall come out of the stock of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of its roots. The spirit of the Lord shall rest on him, the spirit of wisdom and understanding, the spirit of counsel and might, the spirit of knowledge and fear of the Lord." Like Isaiah's shoot of Jesse, on whom the Lord, the Spirit of the Lord rests, in Jeremiah, the branch is also of Jesse and David's line. He has the power of God. The branch will establish God's justice and righteousness finally on earth. The branch will enable Israel and Judah to do what they were called to do, to live justly and righteously. God himself will accomplish this, so that the city of David will be called, "The Lord is our righteousness." In Christian perspective, Jeremiah's words about the branch are fulfilled in Jesus. Jesus, the anointed one, comes to establish God's justice and righteousness. Jesus, who is coming again to transform the world finally in the reign of God. So Jeremiah offers us hope, offers the people of God hope beyond exile to the restoration of Judah and Jerusalem, to the transformation of the world in Christ. I would suggest that the Luke passage also that Dana read for us is about hope, though it may not seem to be about hope at first. There will be signs in the sun, the moon, and the stars, and the earth distress among nations, confused by the roaring of the sea and the waves. Change is afoot. The order of the world is coming undone by the powers of chaos, the sea and the waves. Even the heavens will be shaken. God is coming, and the appearance of God transforms the earth. This news is scary for some, so people will faint from fear and foreboding. But Jesus is speaking to those who should not fear. These people should not run the other way. They should not hide. Instead, Jesus calls them to stand up, to raise their heads in order to see that the Son of Man is coming in a cloud. Throughout Luke, Jesus is identified as the Son of Man. So in this passage, Jesus is present, speaking about his future coming in language reminiscent of theophany language in the Old Testament, language that talks about the coming of God. While the coming of God means judgment for those who are not living in light of God's reign, for Jesus' disciples, the coming of God means hope. Your redemption is drawing near. Like Jeremiah, Luke, and Jesus, we too live in chaotic times. We live in a world where hate, fear, and violence sometimes seem to have all the power. A world of civil war, refugee crisis, international terror. We live in a country where gun violence is epidemic, where racial violence is commonplace. And yet, we, all of us who are here today, are called to be people of hope. God, who appears to be silent and absent in the midst of this chaos, in the midst of injustice and all kinds of evil, will be silent and absent no more. God is coming with great power to transform the world. In the church calendar, today marks the beginning of Advent, which we've already noted here this morning, season leading up to Christmas and Epiphany. Advent is a time of waiting, preparation. Now, when I at least think about waiting, I typically think of lines at the grocery store, waiting for a seat on a favorite amusement park ride. Or I think about waiting in traffic, waiting for the light to turn green, or for everyone else to manage to get to work at the same time as me. But Advent waiting is not like this at all. It's not the waiting of simply doing nothing until at last we can do something. Advent is more like preparation, active waiting. About this time last year, I started knitting a blanket in preparation for the birth of my son, Henry. Now, admittedly, this blanket, the most intricate knitting project I've ever attempted, doesn't get much use now. But the point of the blanket was as much about Henry's post-birth needs as it was about my pre-birth need to begin to participate in the act of caring for Henry even before he arrived, as a way of living into this new reality of our life as a family. In Advent, we wait with the prophets for the coming one. And this waiting is decidedly not just standing around, it is active. Be alert, declares Jesus in Luke. Do not get caught up in the worries of this life that might cause you to forget that a transformation is taking place. What does being alert mean? What does it look like to be alert in Advent? Being alert in Advent means first confession and repentance. Perhaps we, like the Jerusalemites, follow after other gods who are not gods at all, looking to things, material goods, things we can buy, social status, to give our lives meaning and significance. Or perhaps we, like the Jerusalemites, are caught up in systems that continue to oppress, rather than support and defend victims of injustice. Being alert means allowing God to free us from what keeps us from living in light of the reign of God. And then being alert means living into this reign. Being alert to the activity of God in the world, establishing justice and righteousness, particularly for those in need and the vulnerable. Being alert means allowing God to undo injustice in and through us. Being alert means keeping the commandments, loving God and our neighbors vigilantly at all times. I'm often struck by how members of CMC do this, how involved many of you are in Harrisonburg and other communities working for justice, reconciliation, and peace day in and day out. Which is not to say that now we can all pat ourselves on the back as if there is no more work to be done. But what it might mean is that the challenge for some of us in these texts of Jeremiah and Luke may lie elsewhere. Perhaps the challenge is to remain hopeful in the midst of chaos. Perhaps the challenge is to be people of hope in darkness, injustice, even when that darkness and injustice is much stronger than us, even when it is well out of our control. In this, we are called to be people of hope, people who know that the future of justice and righteousness is not up to us alone, but belongs to the Creator and Redeemer of the world. Being alert means living in light of the power of God, living as people of hope, who know that the world will finally be filled with justice and righteousness, with the justice and righteousness of God. Being alert means being bearers of hope in a broken world. So be alert, live in hope, for your redemption is drawing near. The Lord, who is our righteousness, is coming.
Listening to the Community Mennonite Church podcast. Our theme music is a setting of John Wesley's text, Jesus, I Believe You're Near, composed by Matt Carlson. Jeremy Nafziger arranged it for strings. To learn more about our congregation or to plan a visit, please check out our website at cmcva.org.